So now Mike has read the stories in front of and behind of the story that I want to read this morning. I wanted to share the story from 2 Kings chapter 6 regarding the swimming axe head. Now, over the last 4 years, been about 4 years, I have found myself coming back to this particular story in my thoughts. It's one of those things that I've had troubles identifying why it has seemed so important to me. And I've sensed that there's something here in this story that I need. But what is it? So I've repeatedly come back to it. So today, you get to come alongside of me in this little journey in 2 Kings. I really find all of 2 Kings quite interesting. Part of the pull of it for me is the realization that God in this event that we're going to read was delivering a message to a very small group of men who were in a world that was really churning around them and was really becoming quite dangerous. And our world is a lot like that. So today we'll read it, and I would like to share with you some thoughts and observations and ask some questions as we go through it. Every story has a context. So what Mike read to us was part of the context. This context is very large. It's a time of high stress for Israel. It's about 700 BC. God has allowed Israel to be chastened by the Assyrian Empire, which completely surrounds them. I didn't put a lot of study into this, but I believe that the Assyrian Empire at that time even had some control over Egypt. So it was quite powerful. For Israel, it's a time of uncertainty and it's a time of poverty. And Assyria was, with some regularity, coming into the land, ruining their food supplies, killing people and taking slaves. So in that first reading with Naaman, the slave girl was a slave girl taken from Israel, right? That's in that text. So Israel came to hate them quite profoundly. And there's some mention of other problems too. It's part of a very long period where the people of God have forgotten God, and God has largely removed his hand of protection from them and has given them two prophets, Elijah and Elisha. And through those prophets, God is calling Israel back to him. But at the same time, God is also calling Assyria to come to him as well. So we're talking about a period, all of 2 Kings, of spiritual and moral and economic decline that's easily traced back several decades to the judgments of God against Solomon and David. Very specifically, when the beloved King David, at a time of high prosperity and the full support of his nation, used his power to take the woman Bathsheba and to kill her husband and the 35, 36 other men that were with Uriah, her husband, at the time. They all died. And he went from being the hero of Israel to being essentially a rapist and a mass murderer. And so from that point, it's only one or two links from there, with God's rebuke on his life, his family and his kingdom begin to shred, with civil war splitting it into the north, Israel in what's called Israel in the north and Judah in the south, with the majority of the population themselves turning from God, and it all begins to rot from the inside out. So this is many decades later. So our story today comes in the middle of this history, where God appoints the two men, Elijah, and then later his student, Elisha, to be God's voice. And this covers a period of about 80 years, roughly. In the timing of our story, Elijah has passed from the scene. Elisha has taken his position as prophet to Israel and is recognized by Israel and Judah and is also recognized as the story, the last story that was read. He's really prophet to Assyria as well. Reluctantly, but he is. Reluctantly on Assyria's part. During this 80 years, God is talking to this generation and calling them to return to him and to turn their hearts to him and to love him, even as David and Solomon had once done in their youth. But the people at this time are largely unwilling. So the entire period, if you were to read through 2 Kings, it's a narrative about God speaking both to nations and to individuals within those nations. He rebukes kings and armies. And yet we see him, as in our story, deal thoughtfully and tenderly with individuals. So we have a tapestry of stories that illustrate that God has always spoken to both nations and individuals within those nations. Individuals from diverse backgrounds and diverse circumstances. Okay, so with that, let's go to our text, Phil. And we're reading from 2 Kings chapter 6. The company of the prophets said to Elisha, whoever this company of the prophets, a group anyways, following Elisha, "Look, the place where we meet with you is too small for us. Let us go to the Jordan, where each of us can get a pole, and let us build a place there for us to live." And he said, "Go." Then one of them said, "Won't you please come with your servants?" "I will," Elisha replied, and he went with them. They went to the Jordan and began to cut down trees. As one of them was cutting down a tree, the iron axe head fell into the water. "Oh, my Lord," he cried, "it was borrowed." The man of God asked, "Where did it fall?" When he showed him the place, Elisha cut a stick and threw it in there and made the iron float. "Lift it out," he said. Then the man reached out and took it. To help you remember this, we have two axe heads, which are on loan from Ron Cole. Now, I don't remember and who knows what this man's axe head looked like, but I don't remember if they were both Ron's father's or just one of them. Both of them were your dad's? Okay. So up until the handles wore out or were removed, these were both coal-fired woodcutters. Does that make sense to you? Yeah, okay, good. All right, it was a small joke, but I thought I would try. Okay. So, there you go. And so it says that Elisha cut a stick, and threw it in. And I grabbed it. You know, if the Jordan River didn't have diamond willow, they should have, right? And so I cut this stick with all its lichens on, because the scripture could have said a branch. It didn't say a branch, it said a stick. So I'm assuming that Elisha had taken a dead stick as opposed to a living branch for whatever significance that would be. And I just imagine it would have looked exactly like that, right? That's how my mind goes, anyways. Okay, some observations. Elisha cut a stick and threw it there and made the iron float. So, just a comment on the word float. There are other translations that say that the iron swam. Those are more correct. The Hebrew word in the text does mean swim, not floated. So you'll remember this is not a slough, it's not a lake, it's the Jordan River. And I read that this was near the location closer to Jericho where it was a little narrower and a little deeper. I would imagine there was probably more forests and wetlands at that time too, and maybe more water. So the axe head did not just float, it swam according to the text. And I'll leave it up to you to decide whether the axe head, whether it swam this way or whether it swam this way. You can work that over. But it's quite a picture, right? Imagine those men. We don't know how many there were. Imagine those men there seeing that. Imagine on the most ordinary day, the most ordinary day in the world, and the most ordinary task, those men are standing there and they're seeing that. And who knows how long this took? It may only have taken a minute, may have taken 3 minutes, may have taken 5 minutes. But if it was you standing there with that group of men, what would you be thinking about for the rest of the day? When you went to bed that night, what would you be thinking about? When you woke up the next morning, what would you be thinking about? You would never, ever forget that image of an axe head swimming in the Jordan. You'd never forget it. Okay. Question for you. What is the connection between the stick and the axe head? What's the connection?
One floats.
Pardon me?
One floats and the other doesn't.
What? Well, yes, one does float and the other doesn't. I hadn't even thought of that. But you know what? It's a worthy observation. It is.
The one floats naturally.
Yes?
And the other one has a history of
the one destroys the other.
Sorry, one what? It can, yes. one burns better than the other two, yes. Yes. Okay. Yep. Do you want my answer, Rose? Nothing at all. As I was thinking about it, I thought, you know, really, there is no real connection. You know, but that's important, if I'm right. It's important because when you look at Jesus' miracles in the New Testament, for instance, there's no method. There's no magic formula. Jesus uses whatever method or tool he chooses to perform a miracle. Whether he says, go, your daughter is healed, whether it's one spit, two spit, or mud in the eye, or whether he commands demons to depart. He has no particular method. With Moses, God uses that shepherd's staff. When he throws it down, it becomes what? A snake, right? Picks it up, grabs it by the tail, becomes a staff again. With Gideon and his 300 men, he surrounds the thousands of the Midian army with what? He's told three things. He takes three things with him. Sorry?
Jars.
Okay, clay pots And what did they stick in those jars? Torches, yeah. And trumpets they took with them, right? So you would conceal the torch in the pot until you got to your location, right? But that's what God told him to take. And the point is that God is sovereign in all of the affairs and over all of the things of the earth. He, through Jesus, speaks the universe into existence, and by his command, he can calm the Sea of Galilee. It obeys him. But he also seems to take some delight in letting us have a part in what he's doing, and gives to us inappropriate tools to make it more interesting. And here, through Elisha, he uses a stick. It's an inappropriate tool to go fetching an axe head. The stick, what does it do? The stick does nothing. Nothing. It's just part of a sequence which lends some suspense and occasion for thought in the event. In a very real way, the stick is much like Elisha himself. It's lifeless to do anything except through God's empowerment. In a sense, in this story, the stick becomes a symbol of man's partnership with God. God made each one of us, and he made the stick. And he can use, whether it's the stick or use us, in any way he chooses. It, as I look at this passage, lack of ability does not seem relevant. And when I look at this and think about it, I get a little bit excited. Because God, I look in the passage, and God can use any old stick to do a job. And that's beautiful to me. Okay, another question. Why the miracle for this man, this one man? I mean, this is a question that bothers me. Why this man? Here's one of the students of Elisha. We don't know if he's young. We don't know if he's old. Why this man? What we, you know, the scripture doesn't say. But as we look at it, what we do know as the group of men is they have taken time aside from whatever they were doing, whether it was farming or tradespeople. But they took time aside in their lives to attend to the things of God. In a time of rebellion, when nobody was following God, they took time to follow and to be with Elisha. Because they knew Elisha was God's spokesperson for that time. Was God especially endeared to this particular man for some reason? Did he regard his poverty especially? You know, the man's obviously alarmed. He says, "Oh, my Lord, it was borrowed." For not only were iron tools a bit of a luxury at the time, that we know that from other passages, it wasn't his. So we might assume that from his alarm, he was horrified to have lost it because he could ill afford to replace it, if he could replace it. Was that it? You know, we're not told. But we are charmed to see that God was watching this event, and he cared to deliver this axe head back to this man. And the man had a part in it. He lost it. I could do that, right? Secondly, he had to reach out and take it back. God offered it to him, and he accepted it back. That in itself, to me, would be a challenge of faith. Now, if you saw an axe head swimming against the current, would you want to touch it? Okay. There's the odd person that would. We all know children that would do that. But I'd be a little freaked out by it. I would. Okay? But he did. You know, Elisha said, do it. And he did, and he accepted it. What I like is the thought that God was watching, and he did this for this man and for all of the others that were standing by. He did it for all of them. This is an exquisite act of kindness on God's part. And yet, it seems like such a small thing. And we could even be critical of it. Why would God do this when outside this context, or in this context even, the Assyrians are over here, they're looting, they're killing, they're taking slaves. Why doesn't God do something about them? Why doesn't God do something about that? About our crops, about the drought, or whatever. But when I look at these men here, these men, and I think of them, I think all of them have already seen bigger events unfold, and we had the story of Naaman. And they would have benefited a very great deal from this very, very private event. In days to come, I believe that these men would have to suffer as men of God. It's impossible for me to think that they wouldn't have been severely persecuted in the days to come and maligned by their culture and their times. They would not always know the kindness from their fellow men, and maybe would die even for their witness against the sins of their relatives, because they were all related to each other and their neighbors. But from this event and being there, they would always know that even God was witness, and especially God was witness to the smallest details of their lives. God was there watching the event. And they had no idea what was going to happen. But God communicated very clearly that he left nothing unnoticed. God accounted for all things in their lives. And furthermore, it reinforced again the fact that Elisha was the man of the hour for the entire Middle East. So I don't know for certain why God specifically did this on this day for this man. But I think everything I've said was certainly true. Some things in Scripture, when you think of it, are written there because they only happen once, right? When you think of it, that's the reason they're written. It only happened once. Other things in Scripture are written because they are more representative of things that happen a lot. Would you be inclined to think that this story with the axe head is a strange or unusual story? When I stop to ponder it, and I look around at us in this room and our neighbors, I realize that Jesus has done equally interesting things for almost everybody. If I could corner each of you, and some of you will have stories for me, of things that God has done that were absolutely no different than this. But I think if you were able to get the stories from even non-Christians, you would, if they would be willing to admit, they would admit that God has shown his hand to them. In our context here, God is speaking to individuals, but he's speaking to nations. My point today is that God is still speaking to individuals and to nations. And that's what this story is about. I've got a sentence here that says, I've heard and read many a story of people who, especially when they gave their lives to Christ, testified to things like this. But they were things that when they were in rebellion to God, they were not willing to admit to anybody. They would never have told the story. But when they come to Christ, the story comes out. Events that actually happened to them, events that they actually witnessed. And it's happened that God has shown himself clearly to them in a financial matter, or a relationship, or the death of somebody, or protection from harm, or something like an axe head being made to swim. Because God speaks into everybody's lives. And from this I understand that if I speak of my faith to anybody out in the community, it likely is not the first time that God has spoken to them. So I need not fear that I'm the first one to make a move. God has already spoken to them. In their past, God has allowed them to see his hand. They may not disclose it, what has happened to them, but God has either talked to them or showed himself to them. So, to close, I want to share another axe head story. And in itself, even the occurrence of this is almost an axe head parable to me. Ron has provided two axe heads here, which had no significance to me at the time. but to me, it's significant that there's two axe heads here. I actually wrote this message in December of 2012, so about 3 years ago. As I was writing this message, as in the week that I wrote it, I heard this story on the radio as I was driving to work one morning, and it came through Charles Price's morning between 8:30 and 9. He's on at 9:30 on the 9:30 station. And Charles Price, who is the pastor of People's Church in Toronto. Now, I only heard this story once, and I missed really the first few words he said. So I hope I got most of the details correct. This story, I believe, had come through Don Richardson, who was a witness to this event. Now, do you know who Don Richardson is? He wrote Peace Child, okay? That's his most famous book. Wrote Lords of the Earth, Eternity in Their Hearts, wrote that one. And I've got one at home that he wrote called Secrets of the Quran. So he's done a lot of writing. So he was there for this event. Anyways, the story happened some time ago when he was with an evangelistic team in Africa. He was heading to a village that had not heard the gospel before. And as per local protocol, they had prior permission from the elders to enter the village with the message about Jesus. They had the permission. But upon entering the village, they were met, coming from the other side, an entourage led by the head witch doctor of the area. Now, of course, it was the mandate of that group and the witch doctor to express that Don's team was unwelcome in that village and in that area with that message. And with that came a very confrontive challenge from the witch doctor. The witch doctor took an axe head and he put it on a stump and he proceeded through sorcery to levitate that about 2-3 feet above the stump. Now imagine being there to see that. Not too unusual in Africa. But it happens to you and your team. And at this point, Don Richardson said he was pretty nervous about this. I mean, I'd be nervous. I mean, what's going to happen here? And the witch doctor said, can your Jesus do the same thing? Can your Jesus do the same thing? And Dawn was pretty nervous. This is a direct confrontation. They're surrounded by the village people. They're surrounded by people who oppose them. How do you answer this? What do you say? Do you try to do the same thing? What if you fail? What if it doesn't work? So Don said he was quite frightened by this event. Well, what actually happened is this. At that point, a Nigerian pastor stepped forward to address the crowd, and he said something of this nature. He said, "This spirit, your spirits, can indeed raise this axe head. But can your spirits take away your fears? Can they take away your fear of death? Can they make your hearts clean? Can they make you better husbands or better fathers or better neighbors?" And then he continued to address the crowd and to give them the gospel and tell them how Jesus could change their lives and how they would be reconciled to the living God. And when he was done giving the gospel, he turned back to the witch doctor and to the axe head, which was now lying on the stump again. And he began to speak to the witch doctor. And at this point, Don Richardson said, he got really nervous again, like, what's going to happen now? But this Nigerian pastor said, "But so that you may know that Jesus has power over the physical as well as the spiritual," he says, "I forbid you to raise that axe head again. I forbid you." And apparently for the next hour, the witch doctor tried through a sorcery to raise the axe head, could not do it again. He went so far as to slash himself and bloodlet to try to get the spirits to raise it again. Of course, after that, they were welcomed into the village. So there you go, a modern day axe head story. In our first story, which happens 700 BC, God raises an axe head and causes it to swim. In the 21st century, God forbids an axe head to be raised and forces it to be still. What I like about the whole thing is this. It's that all of us here in this room, we're right here in this, we're right there in the story. We're right in the story. The story is about us and about the nation around us. God is speaking to Canadians and to Europeans and to Arabs and Africans and Asians and South Americans. But he speaks into our lives and lets us in on the fact that he is present in the small things. Now, at times, I want him to do the big things instead. But instead, sometimes he'll raise an axe head in the middle of the most boring workday on earth to demonstrate that he oversees the big things too, even if some of the big things don't go the way I want them to go. So when I read this passage, when I hear this passage, I feel like I am one of the men standing right there. I've seen something that God let me in on. And, you know, and of course it's a very male-dominated thing. When you look at Scripture, God giving women things is something different, like giving a woman a son or some status. But here's a group of men. They're interested in tools, right? And God speaks to them in his own, in their own language. And the other thing about this is I'm standing there, I get to see this axe head swim. But who am I going to tell? You can't tell that story to anybody. they would just think you were nuts, and like you had gone off your rocker a little bit. And who cares, right? But this was something that God gave to them. They couldn't even repeat it to anybody because it wouldn't make sense to anyone. Nobody would believe it. But God has let them see it. God has let me see it. And God has given me brothers and sisters who understand what has happened. And that, as I look at the story, makes me feel very, very rich. And I am rich because God let me in on something that he did. And of course, the other thing I really like about it is going back to that little principle that God can use any old stick that he wants at any time. Most days, I just feel like an old stick. I really do. I don't even feel like a living stick. I feel like an old dry stick. But God can use it, and God can use me, dry or otherwise. So that is the event of the axe head. So Mike had read the account of Elisha leading the Assyrian army into Samaria. So I want to cover that as well. In March, I will lead you through that passage. So read that again for yourself. I see the axe head and the story of Naaman and the story of Elisha leading the army into Samaria. I see that all as one story. These men in this story are present for all of this. So, and they get to see the dead stick. They get to see the axe head float. They get to see God's exquisite kindness to them.